How do companies create a culture and core values that employees actually live out? The team at The Receptionist, a Denver-based software company, sets out to answer that very question. Welcome to The Fabric. Here's your host, Michael Ashford.
In this episode, Andy Alsup, our CEO and president, as well as Tom Foster, our director of sales, join me to discuss their recent trip to the EOS Traction Conference in Indianapolis, Indiana. As a company that has built itself off of the Traction model, the entrepreneurial operating system model, it was interesting for Tom and Andy to go to the conference for the first time and bring back ideas of not only what we can further implement here at The Receptionist, but perhaps some areas where we have fallen a little short as a self-implemented company. So we'll talk about what all that means here in this episode, and we get into what the future might look like. Here it is, my conversation with Andy and Tom. Welcome back to The Fabric. We no longer attach the podcast onto it. It's just The Fabric. How you guys doing?
Doing great. I love the fact that we're just calling it The Fabric.
I do too. I actually like that. Yeah, doing very well.
So you guys have been doing a little bit of traveling, and that's what we're going to talk to about today on this episode here of the show. EOS, Traction. Tom, you had a little bit of a homecoming, I guess, going back to Indianapolis to the EOS Traction Conference. But we're going to give an update here in this episode for those listening. We're going to give an update on what it's been like being a self-implemented company of the EOS and Traction model. We may, 6 months down the road, talk about some of the changes that we've made now coming out of this conference that you're about to hear. But Andy, let's start with you. The decision to implement Traction 5+ years ago now, what went into that? What went into the decision to self-implement, I should say?
Well, so I've been an entrepreneur almost my entire career. And running companies has been, at times, a complete disaster. And that is because I haven't had a system. And I'll be honest with you, when we started The Receptionist, and maybe I'm getting a little vulnerable here, it was a little bit of a disaster. We had meetings that were going on forever. We were bringing on employees who weren't a good fit for our culture. We didn't even know what our culture was. And so when I was introduced the first time to the Entrepreneurial Operating System, or EOS, I read the book and I said to myself, this is something we've got to implement. And I don't know that we can go all the way forward in terms of what we did with that, but it's been an amazing journey and transformative.
Yeah, we've covered that in previous episodes. So what I'll do is I'll link that up in the show notes so people can go back and listen to the actual implementation. But I'm curious, you kind of referenced it there, Andy. What do you mean by a disaster? You mentioned long meetings, but what else went into that?
Well, I mean, a lot of employees didn't know really what we were doing. We weren't on the same page. So as we were trying to build the company, I think a lot of employees didn't even know what we were trying to build. And there wasn't a good sort of vision for the business. There definitely were not core values. And I've said it a bunch of times, but I'll say it again. I came into the Entrepreneurial Operating System, and I thought that, you know, core values, schmore values, I really didn't kind of value that at all. And when we put in our core values, when we sat down and said, what is it that inspires us and that wants to make this company better? And we went through that exercise and we did it through the Entrepreneurial Operating System. We really discovered what our core values were, and that just really led to everything else. And then we didn't even have a one-year plan. We didn't have a quarterly plan. We were just kind of like, all right, let's just see what we're doing now. So the things that we learned by doing that and self-implementing really transformed our business and transformed me, because I feel like the success we've had now is as a result of the work we did around EOS.
So it's so interesting in hearing that we're here talking on a show called The Fabric, and Fabric stands for our core values that came out of that process. I saw a LinkedIn post recently by someone in HR talking about core values. And she said, I bet you most of your employees can't recite
your core value, your company's core values. So Tom, I'm going to put you on the spot. Can you recite the five or six core values that make up Fabric?
If I can, it's on the wall behind us.
I know, right?
Fun, authentic, bold, respectful, innovative, and collaborative.
Ding, ding, ding. You got it. So Tom.
I earned my supper. Yay!
Tom, coming into the company years after that process had been completed, had you had any experience with the EOS or traction model before?
Not as it's called. Like a lot of these things I was doing and didn't know what to call it. So when Andy and I chatted, he mentioned traction. I immediately bought the book, actually all of them, and I couldn't put it down. I was like, yes, yes, there's a direction. We know what we're doing. It's not this way one week, another way another week. And as I was going through the interviewing process, I was like, wow, this is the way to run a company, because everybody, and to use the thing you've said, is rowing in the right direction. We have a set path for us to go to. So for me, it was very, calming to be able to know that, hey, this is what we're going to do. It was also very exciting to be able to do a level 10 meeting and not sit in a meeting to talk about the meeting we were going to have eventually, and with no beginning and no end. And it was almost like some of the meetings I've been to in my life before just were droning on and on, and everybody had to get their 45 minutes of chat in, and the day was over with. So that was one of the biggest things for me. Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
So I referenced Indianapolis earlier. I don't know that I ever finished that thought. So the EOS Traction Conference, the annual conference, was held in Indianapolis. Tom, you are from Indianapolis, or that area, I should say.
Yep.
So it was a little bit of a homecoming for you, but between the two of you, you both went. Why the decision now to go?
Well, I have to say, Tom said, hey, look, did you know that the Traction or the EOS conference is coming up? And I was like, no. And so I took a look at it and I was like, we need to go to this. Mm-hmm. And Tom really wanted to go to it as well. So
yeah,
we ended up making the decision to go. And I think, you know, we're probably going to get into this, but it was transformative, I've got to say, because as you said, we were self-implemented up to this point. Mm-hmm. And so being self-implemented, we're basically working off a book, maybe some videos that we saw, or actually several books or whatever. But actually to be there was just a different experience. Mm-hmm. And I've been thinking about it. It's a little bit like a cult. It's like, you know, 2,000 people all getting together in Indianapolis to talk about, you know, their core values and their level 10 meetings and everything else. And they're all speaking the same language. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. It was Tom who was the inspiration, and I'm glad he inspired us to go and attend the conference.
Yeah, all these words you've thrown around, level 10 core values. are you a visionary or an integrator? Tom, why did it catch your eye?
Great question. So as a company, the receptionist continues to grow. We're getting to that point where we're going to need another layer of management. And one of the things that I was looking for is how can we get some training for these individuals that is going to stick with our core values and stick with Traction so that we can have it all in one place. And as we started looking through this conference, it was just like, wow, okay, we need to really go to this just to see and vet it from our own. Is this something that we want to put the employees through that are going to go to that next level? And I think going into it, I was like, wow, this is going to be cool. But coming out of it, when it was done, it was like, wow, we're missing this and this, and there are a lot of things to do. So that was the genesis of actually bringing it to Andy and saying, hey, let's go check this out. Plus it was in Indiana, you know, it's one of the greatest places to go for conferences. Who needs a beach, right? When you can go to the cornfields.
You know, part of the reason I think we're doing this is so we hold ourselves accountable to, hey, you guys came out of that conference, got a lot of ideas, things to do, as is typical with conferences, right? And now we need to actually implement some of these things. And that's why we're going to hold a future episode down the road to talk about what we actually do from this discussion. But one of the things that, as we were talking about this episode, the three of us, that both of you mentioned that came out of that conference, and then we'll get into some of the other tactical stuff, but you both said that there was an atmosphere or an emphasis on love. Mm-hmm. And Tom, I know this really struck you. Mm-hmm. What were you feeling? Love in relation to business, how? And your employees, how? I guess is the question.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's not something I think either one of us going into this thought, we're going to come out of this with love. You don't think of that at business. But what it did for me really is it made me slow down. It made me focus on caring about my team as individuals and not just numbers and not just what can they produce. And it made me more intentional as a leader. And it's not some, I don't know, weird kind of love where, you know, that makes people feel uncomfortable. It's just actually caring about that person on an individual level for more than just like, hey, what can you do for me? Because as leaders, our real job is what can I do for you? And that's where a lot of folks, I think, get it wrong. They think, oh, I'm a leader. I'm going to tell people what to do. No, your job is to serve people. And putting it in the context of love really helped me to understand, because I do care about everybody in this company. And I do care about what their futures are and what their home life is and how they're going to grow as human beings. And I think that's one of the reasons that struck me so well, is because I wanted to go to this conference to do one of my ultimate goals, which is to create 10 leaders in the next 10 years. And that's 10 people that are in those leadership or management type positions. So that really kind of like cemented it. I was like, oh, okay. It was weird when it was first said, though. It was like, oh, I love all of you. And we're like, what? Huh?
Andy, you kind of mentioned it as this feeling of an evolution. I know you followed Gino Wickman, kind of the creator of the entrepreneurial operating system, for a long time. What was it that felt, I guess, transformative or just that had that undertone of love? What was it that you felt or picked up on?
Well, I mean, we all know at the receptionist, we always talk about it on employee supremacy. And employee supremacy is about really being in tune with your employees and serving your employees and recognizing that they're the most important part of your business. And when I heard what Gino was saying around love, and he was crossing the stage as he's talking to 2,000 people, and he's like, you really need to bring love and intention to what you're doing. I'm basically like, yeah, that's employee supremacy. That's what it's all about. And so to have him say that, I actually followed up with him afterwards and asked him a question about that. Tom was there with me just because I was like, where is this coming from? Because I'm like, you know, dude, we're in tune on this one a lot. And as Tom said, it wasn't like a weird thing. And it wasn't like people were like, oh, he's talking about love again or something. We're business people. We don't talk about love. You know, we're talking about making money or whatever. It really kind of transcended the whole room, mm-hmm. This massive room that they had. And so, I don't know, I really connected with that. And I really felt like this is the reason why I find the EOS and entrepreneurial operating system to be so important, is that it aligns with what I have as values. And I think as we have as values, yeah, and how we run our business as well. So that's really kind of the epiphany or what I came away with.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a question for both of you. Mm-hmm. You know, there is, I've heard some pushback recently on, you know, companies and leaders that refer to their teams or their companies, the employees as a family. Mm-hmm. You don't get to pick your family is what a lot of people say. There's some pushback or some hesitation there because of perhaps family trauma or just not having a great family experience. If somebody were to hear what you just said and then kind of compare it to that kind of pushback against family, you both have kind of mentioned it's not this weird, like, well, I guess, Andy, you called it a cult earlier, but it's not this weird, like, uncomfortable, we're forcing anything on you. But mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you could both kind of expand on that and how you see this different than what I just mentioned, that some of that, I don't know that I want to see my employees or my work group like that. Expand on that a little bit.
Well, I think I'd like to start with it, mm-hmm. because this is one, I'm going to be honest with you, I've struggled with it, because you can't fire your family, right? You can't fire a family member. They are your family member. You can, unfortunately, sometimes you have to let go of employees. If there isn't a match, if they aren't the right person in the right seat to speak the parlance, mm-hmm. and they may not GWC, get it, want it, and can do it. And so that's where I have struggled with it. But at the same time, I feel like the team of people we have, and we've been together for a long time, we've had almost nobody leave this company voluntarily. Mm-hmm. You know, when you see that, it does get to be a little bit more like a family. I just came up today from Santa Fe, my home, and come to Denver a lot. And when I come in, I'm giving hugs to employees and stuff because they're really important to us. Mm-hmm. They're important to me. I've gotten to know them. So I do struggle a little bit with the whole family reference, mm-hmm. but at the same time, I feel like we're a family. I don't know. It's a tough one. I don't know. That's probably very confusing. Maybe Tom can clarify that. I don't know.
No, I don't think it's super confusing because for me, I came out of the conference. One of the biggest sessions that I really enjoyed was open and honest communication.
Right.
So what it allowed me to do, Michael, I asked myself this question. Am I making this decision out of love or am I making this decision out of fear? Is what I'm about to do or what I'm about to ask a team member to do being done of a fear of mine or a love for them and their growth? And it's really helped me to kind of slow down. Andy and I had a nice meeting this morning where we kind of went back and forth with that kind of idea of, is this for love for the growth of the company and growth of and furtherment of everybody within it? And at the end, we were like, yeah, this is a great idea.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of things I think for me where the love and the family really comes in is because you can have that separation where it's not like I have to do this because you're a family member. It's I get to do this and I want to do this. And the C, capacity. And I have the capacity to do this because I do really care about these individuals and love them in a way that helps their future grow. It is mutually beneficial for everybody, whereas sometimes in families, it's one-sided. And that's where I think there may be a little bit of a difference
between
the family, family, and work family.
Yeah, I definitely think there are different types of love. There's what you're talking about is a care, a deep care for the person. Mm-hmm. And Tom, you mentioned that earlier, a caring about their well-being, both physically and mentally and emotionally. That all, I think, makes sense in a business sense. Mm-hmm. And Tom, you kind of hit on that there in that answer. And Aaron Ferguson on our last episode talked about that and the unspoken expectations that we set as leaders and managers. So a lot of good correlation there. Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit here. We mentioned we're self-implemented. We self-implemented the Traction model, the entrepreneurial operating system model here at The Receptionist. It's been 5+ years now since we've done that, since I wasn't even here. Tom, you weren't here. Andy, you were one of just a handful. Now we're above 25. So what did you guys take away from the conference and say, oh my gosh, we don't do that actually how we were supposed to, or I forgot about that. What were some of the things that I guess kind of rocked you a little bit? Like, oh, oops, we were exactly following the model there. What comes to mind? Tom, let's start with you, man.
A lot. Well, one of the things that I've implemented since the conference is I'm doing the quarterly conversations with my team. So quarterly conversations, I think, is super valuable to get to that human side, that personal side of the individual. It's an offsite. It's 60 to 90 minutes. There's no real agenda. Ask a few questions, have a meal, have some coffee, whatever it may be. And it just allows us to get away and have a conversation without it being distracted by work or completely focused on work. I think that's the first one that I was like, I have to do this because it's really easy as you grow as a company and as a leader and get a bigger and bigger team to step back and not have that connection. And eventually you can't have a connection with everybody, but you can connect with everybody if you're very intentional about it. I think that's one of the things that I've tried to do as a leader is make sure that I have that intentional connection because I have people that are not in this state. I don't get to see them all the time.
Yeah.
So having very intentional, I have to make sure in my own eyes to let them know that they're being cared for.
And that's exactly the point of this show is like we're exploring how companies grow and scale and keep a culture that is healthy and is the definition of fabric, fun, authentic, bold, respectful, innovative, collaborative, all those. So from that aspect, Tom, what part of those core values that I just rattled off there, mm-hmm. what part of our core values do you think mm-hmm. that quarterly pulse fits into?
Authentic. So many times as a leader in a business, whether you're a VP or a director or CEO, is a lot of times you forget the human aspect of the people that are working around you, that are in your charge. They're the folks that our job is to serve them. I know I said it already once, but I think for me, it was that authentic, non-agenda, just let's go down and have a beer, whatever it may be, and just get to know the human being behind all of this. Because you said it on the last podcast, where you're accepting the entire human being at work. You've got to accept the whole entire person, flaws, strengths, weaknesses, whatever it may be, you've got to be able to do that. And I think that gives not only you an opportunity to see them, but them an opportunity to see you in a way that they may not ever see that before. They may just see you as like, this is the boss. I have to do this. I don't know if that's here that way, but a lot of companies, it's like that.
Mm-hmm. Could creep in as we grow for sure. And you become mm-hmm. further and further detached from the leadership of the company for sure. Tom, your excitement over those quarterly pulses definitely has me wanting to do that with my team too. So marketing team, be on the lookout.
You're going to lunch.
Yeah. Darn, you're going to get a company paid lunch, right? Andy, what about you? What was your big takeaway? And I know I want to get to a bunch of them, but what was the one that you came back and be like, man, we got to get back into a rhythm of this?
You know, I had forgotten a lot of the vocabulary of EOS going into it and didn't kind of brush up. And one of my first discussions, the cool part, just to give you the setting, you're there amongst people who have come to the conference for years before, have implemented, are talking about like enormous growth in some cases where they're actually like tripling their revenue in a year and, you know, implementing it and saying that. And so when I came into the conference, people were saying, so what do you guys do? And everything you say, you know, we are, and we do this and that. And then they'd say, okay, so are you the visionary or the integrator? And I'd be like, okay, well, I know I'm the visionary. I think we, you know, Tom and I went out and like found a little sticker that said, you know, you're the visionary. But we didn't have a named integrator.
Yeah.
And I think almost everybody who we talked to, like, they were a little bit like, oh, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have an integrator. And so I think that's something that has come top of mind for me. It is interesting. I'm getting into the kind of the authenticity, and this is what Gino talks about. It's just about being authentic. Stop trying to like saying what you really want to say. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so it really became sort of apparent that we didn't have these two roles. So I think it was Tom who said, go over to the website for Rocket Fuel, I think, mm-hmm. and take the test, which is the integrator visionary test. And I took that, and I'm not the typical visionary. They actually, Gino talks about it on stage. The visionary is usually somebody comes up with, you know, 30 ideas a day and wants to pursue all of them at once. And then the next day has a whole new set of 30, and they need an integrator to be able to balance them out. Mm-hmm. And I think we've been able to succeed where we are now because I am not that person. I don't come up with 30 ideas. Hopefully that's not what, you know, the rest of you are saying. Oh yeah, actually, Andy, you do come up with 30 ideas.
That's just not my experience. No.
Not your experience. I'm pretty, you know,
I come up with ideas, just not that many.
Exactly. And I'm not like, let's go in 12 different directions at the same time. So I think we've had that, that success, but I think at the same time, the idea of having a named integrator, you know, where I might be able as a visionary to go off and really focus on what we want to do in strategy and looking 2 to 5 years down the road. I don't have as much of that time. So that is where I think probably that 6-month episode is going to come in is where we are with that.
Yeah.
Because every single company that I talked to that was succeeding, that was scaling, they had both the visionary and the integrator. Mm-hmm.
We're getting ready to launch a new product, and we've referenced it several times here, kind of in passing that, hey, something's coming. and we'll do an episode here shortly on that. But in that world, Andy, as you kind of look at launching of a new product, you know, still a visitor management system, but specific to an industry, do you feel any pressure in that world or in that space that we're currently sitting in?
I don't know if I feel pressure. I just wonder if, to scale this business and to scale that product, you really need somebody who's in there thinking about all the tactical things. You know, as leaders, you know, you're thinking about marketing. Tom's thinking about sales. Dylan's talking about engineering. Lizanne's thinking about the customer experience. But there's nobody in that role right now who is thinking about, like, how do we take this vision and actually execute on the vision and scale it? And I think that's where I can do it, But doing both has been really hard. I find myself, I mean, just examples is that, you know, we've had to deal with sales tax. You know, sales tax has been a huge thing. That's taken up a huge amount of my time to do that because we really need somebody tactically saying, okay, this is how we're going to deal with it. There's other things as well that come up, which means that I am no longer working on that. So I think it's not as much pressure as it is really the opportunities that we may actually not be able to realize by not having somebody in that position. And it's not easy. You know, you're talking about bringing somebody in who, you know, he or she may have a very strong impact on the company. And, but it's so, you know, I don't know where to go with it yet because we're still kind of working through what that's going to look like.
Yeah.
But it's something that I think I can continue to handle. We're at 25 people. Mm-hmm. When we get to 100 or 150, I don't think that I can handle both of those. And I think it would be a disservice to the business without that person, without the integrator.
We've referenced that we didn't have an implementer, which is different than an integrator, which we also don't have a named integrator, but we are self-implemented here. And one of the things, well, some of the things that we have done is we've strayed from or gone rogue a little bit from the traditional Traction EOS model in that, you know, we got rid of meeting ratings. We don't rate our meetings anymore at the end. We don't use the people analyzer as part of that process. The issues list, the VTO, we've added things like there's of course the issues list backlog, but then we've elevated these tiers into analysis phase and then actual projects. And we've got this umbrella of initiatives that hover over the top of the rocks that we do each and every quarter over the course of a year. So Andy, going rogue and not having that implementer, doing the self-implementation, would you characterize it as a good or a bad thing?
I don't know. I think it's interesting because we've tested some things and tried some things, but we don't have as the sounding board without an implementer. We don't have somebody that says, whoa, if you go in that direction, you're going to have some consequences you're not expecting. And so that's where I think an implementer comes in because we are all, the five members of the leadership team, are all really deep into what we're doing. But we don't have somebody who's extracted from that and standing back or sitting back and saying, you know what you're doing here is great, but what you're doing over here isn't great. And have you done this or have you tried implementing that? So that's the kind of value that I think an implementer could bring to us. It's a little bit of a check and balance.
Mm-hmm. Tom, anything to add there? What do you see?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I don't know if it's good or bad either. I like the word interesting because it is interesting.
Because
we implemented analysis phase projects and initiatives just before we went to the conference.
It's true.
And I was at the conference going, oh, what did we do? I'm like, oh, it's no.
I had the same thought.
is it good or bad? I don't know. I do think interesting is the way to say it. But I definitely think having somebody with experience in doing this, and after hearing these people just, you know, doubling or tripling their revenue and following the system, it really did kind of make me go, oh, boy, did we screw up? But you know what? We're all so vested in what we do that if we make a mistake, it's like no big deal. Like, okay, cool. That's bold. Yeah. Like we figure it out. And if it's a mistake, we change it and move on.
And And on top of it, with an implementer, you get somebody who's taken a look into a whole bunch of businesses and seen what's worked and what hasn't worked. So I think that would also be helpful. But I agree with Tom. I mean, we try stuff. And I think that's what makes us a great company is that we're not afraid to try things. And if they don't work, we ditch them. And if they work, we keep, you know, we keep iterating to make it better. So
for the folks who do understand Traction and EOS, I want to paint a little bit of a picture here about what we just talked about. So there's the issues list, which is a part of the VTO, the Vision Traction Organizer, which is a 2-page summary of your business. Your entire business needs to be summarized on those 2 pages. You have issues that you know the company needs to work on. What we have done is we wanted a way to kind of like decide which project or which one of those issues to work on and to understand what the uplift was going to be to actually work on those things. So you've got the issues backlog. Then what we did is we added an analysis phase. So we will elevate one, maybe two of those issues into the analysis phase every quarter, where we go and take a look at what is it actually going to take to get this done? What are the resources that we're going to need? Are there going to be costs? Do we need to hire for this? Do we need outside help? How much time is this going to take away from other projects? And we bring that back to the leadership team and we say, here's the analysis of this issue and what it will take. If we decide it's not worth it, then it gets tossed. If we say, hey, not right now, it could go back onto the issues list, or it could get elevated into a project. And that project then becomes, we're actually actively working on solving that issue, which is, you know, not something that I know that I'm aware of that Traction defined as like, what does it mean when you are actually working on an item from the issues list? We've also have this umbrella term of initiatives where, for instance, here at the receptionist, we're really focused in the behavioral health space for all of 2023. We're focused on launching and getting that new product that we've referenced a couple times out the door and in the hands of paying customers in 2023. Those are larger initiatives that our quarterly rocks feed into that have targets assigned to them. Targets is our stand-in word for goals. Maybe we'll cover that on a different episode. I know there's one other initiative that I'm forgetting, guys, but did I describe in a 50,000 foot view how we've kind of gone rogue with the issues list a little bit here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think actually when I went to the conference, I realized basically Traction just talks about all that stuff we just talked about as rocks. Yep. They're just rocks. Nothing. And we've kind of created subcategories of rocks and rocks rolling up to things, you know? So I think that's maybe where we went wrong, or maybe where it really works and it's a way to do things. And what I love about it is this whole idea of doing this project analysis. Mm-hmm. Because if you just say, okay, hey, let's do this rock, it's going to be to completely revamp and reinstall an entire financial software in our company. Well, actually, you kind of got to do some analysis before you actually do the implementation. We did that about a hiring initiative and things, and it ended up spawning three other things as a result. Right. And so I kind of like it. I was a little nervous, you know, mm-hmm. when we introduced it. I think it was in January of this year. Was it January? I don't remember. Yeah. But, you know, when we introduced it, I was a little nervous. We're adding complexity. Now we're two quarters down the road and I'm actually thinking it's kind of working. But then again, an implementer might be able to help really dig into that one.
And in the future episode that we do to come back to this topic, we'll report on it. It'll be about a year into that process and we'll see. We'll see. But Traction has worked recently for us, Tom, right? I mean, we have, for whatever reason, our sales and marketing meeting each week, we were not following the level 10 meeting structure. Then we decided why, or we asked the question, why not? Tom, just go talk through that process of actually like bringing that structure to our sales and marketing meeting and what it's meant to us and the team.
I think it's another instance where you and I are on the literal exact same page. We both had it on our one-on-one sheet at the same time, the same week, after just going in and going, why? Because it was just literally us reading numbers. And if we want to know what numbers are, we can just look at the spreadsheets or Salesforce. It's that easy. You sent a picture a little while ago of a look I had when a camera failed. And that's kind of what it was. For those of you that don't know, I was like, ooh, we've all been in those meetings. So for me,
looked bored out of his mind.
Bored out of my mind. So in a nutshell, those meetings were us reading numbers and it wasn't very collaborative. There was no C. It didn't feel very authentic because it was all past data. There wasn't any way to really take us. And I can tell you it wasn't fun.
Yeah.
No, I don't think anybody looked forward to it. We were all like, yeah, sales and marketing. Now we're like, sales and marketing meeting. Cool. It went from literally an hour to now
20 minutes. I think today was 20 minutes.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, you know, for me in bringing that level 10 structure to that sales and marketing meeting, we actually came out of that meeting with things to do, like ways to actively improve either a marketing campaign or what the sales reps are telling the prospects, like, or potential customers. We actually have action items that come out of those meetings instead of what you said, Tom, like Okay. I could have meetings that could have been an email is what goes through my mind. Like that's really what it was. And so bring for us on the marketing side, being able to hear those updates from the, each individual sales team member, and then having that collaborative discussion where we can talk about how we're going to use this new video that the marketing team has put together, or here's just today. So we're recording this on a Tuesday. We had a discussion today about, or maybe it was last week, about Ellie. They have a conference coming up. We're going to go. We want to talk about how do we actually collaborate there, and or on our product tour, on our website. We talked about how do we implement this new feature and do it in an appropriate way that's going to make sense for everyone who comes into that. It's just we're solving problems with actionable takeaways, and I enjoyed that part of it the most, for sure. So as we wrap this up, guys, we've talked about it. We're going to come back in 6 months and kind of decide what or recap what has taken place from this point forward. Now that you've gone to the conference, we've talked about some things that we've realized we're not necessarily following the model, but perhaps that's a good thing. For you, Tom, what do you you talked about the quarterly polls. Mm-hmm. As you look out over the next 6 months or so, give mm-hmm. or take, what is something that you want to see change? What's a goal that you have outside of that mm-hmm. quarterly pulse? What's a mm-hmm. goal that you have from what you've learned and your takeaways from that conference?
It's a great question. I think for me, getting the team to continue with more open and honest communication to allow them to really dig in to where they want to go and how they want to grow. I think for me, for the next 6 months, one thing I'm working on is elevating and delegating. What are the things that I'm picking up that I don't need to, so I can work on the sales department instead of in the sales department to help it grow and to help our growth as a company.
Okay. So the skeptic is going to hear that answer and then hear, you know, you said you met people who tripled their business using the traction model. How do you think that's going to affect our growth here mm-hmm. at The Receptionist over the next 6 months, focusing on that part of the traction model?
That's another really good question. So for the skeptic out there, if there are any runners that are out there, if you run fast all the time, you do not get faster. You actually have to go slow to go fast because you have to build your aerobic capacity first. So this is building your mind's aerobic capacity to be able to have the thought or the time to think about the strategy that you need to grow. So that is for the skeptic. It's going to be hard because you're used to going, I'm 150 miles an hour when y'all met me. Now I'm down to about 95, but it does. It allows you that time. And that's the thing I think that people don't realize that they need as a leader or as anybody in the company. You really need time to think, because if you're just go, 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 you don't find the time to find those little things and those little suggestions that could make you more efficient that would allow you to grow faster. Because if you do the same thing all the time, and Mr. or Mrs. Skeptic that's out there that says, we've always done it that way, it's time to maybe look at why.
You're letting a little bit of Simon Sinek in The Infinite Game bleed into our conversation about traction and EOS. We're blending of worlds here, Tom.
Sorry.
Simon, more recently, and Andy and I were just talking about this at our one-on-one yesterday, he's using a lot of exercise metaphors in a lot of his recent talks and appearances. So maybe we'll talk about that too. I know we all three like our exercise in different modes and modalities. Oh, yeah. So Andy, what about you? What are you looking ahead to over the next 6 months? I'll flat out ask, are we going to get an implementer here?
We've interviewed a couple of implementers.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting because I always use the analogy that it's hard to fix the plane while you're flying. Mm-hmm. Kind of feels like that,
yeah.
You know? So we're launching a product. You know, if we bring in an implementer, that's going to change up a lot of things. They're going to say you need probably an integrator. That's going to change up some things. So that's the struggle I look at, is how can we keep flying the plane and work on it at the same time?
Andy, we've talked about this before. Our process of hiring, and we've gone into our hiring process here on this show, we kind of apply the same model to the people that we work with as well. Like mm-hmm. they've got to be invested in the infinite game, or at least that mindset. They've got to be invested in, hey, we want to be collaborative here. We want to be bold, but we also want to be respectful of people. Just talk about that as you search for an implementer. How important is that going to be to vet them just like we would any other employee that's coming in and working on our business?
It's interesting because I think it may go along with the same question of, do you need an implementer that has industry experience? And I've actually been disavowed by that. Everybody I have talked to said an implementer is an implementer that represents the system and represents getting that system implemented. And so I don't know if it does, you know, I think it already aligns because a lot of what is in EOS is the way we're operating.
Yeah.
So if they know the EOS system, I think, and we've already spoken to two of them so far and then a couple of others at the conference. Mm-hmm. And I got the same message. It's kind of like they are there to make sure that EOS is implemented correctly at your company. Rather than like, oh, well, in this industry, we say we're going to do it this way. Or if you have these core values, you do it this way. And I thought I liked that a lot because then it comes down to, is this a personality that I really like working with? And also, do I see these people being able to work with the forces that we are mm-hmm. as a company, you yeah. know? Because you want to be in alignment with those people because you're really... Luckily for us, it's not like we're going to go implement EOS from day one kind of thing where there's nothing there. It's more kind of like, let's tune the engine here. Mm-hmm. And they said in the interviews, like, you guys are pretty far down the road. So it's not like, you know, they might start out with like a 3-day session or something. I said, we can probably get it done in a 1-day session because we're not teaching you the vocabulary and teaching you the system. Right. You guys know it. You just need to, you know, kind of maybe tune the engine a little bit.
Beautiful. Well, what do you say we do this again in 6 months or so, all right?
Let's do it. I love it. I love it. I hope that other entrepreneurs can follow the journey. You know?
Yeah, we'll give everyone an update with everything that we've talked about here and maybe some more as we maybe find an implementer and find out other things that we're not aware of. So thanks, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. This was a good conversation and yeah, we'll do it again, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Fabric. Our show is hosted by me, Michael Ashford, Director of Marketing here at The Receptionist, and produced by our creative manager, James Jordan. If you want to see a video version of the show, jump over to thereceptionist.com/fabric, where you can watch episodes of all of the content that we've put out on this podcast. You can see our bright, smiling faces, and you can see what our studio looks like as well. If you'd like to give The Receptionist for iPad Visitor Management System a try in your office, jump over to thereceptionist.com/free trial and give us a test drive for 14 days with no credit card required. See what you think. Until next time, take care.